I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports' daily NFL podcast. I am Will Brinson. I am your host. Missed two shows last week. Get to go moving forward. Excited for it. Joined, as I am every Sunday night, by the NFL super friends, Ryan Wilson.
Yo, yo, yo.
Sean Wagner.
What's up?
McGuff. And John Breach.
John Breach, who does math. You missed four shows, Brinson.
I did?
I only got paid for two, but it was four.
Ah, okay, well. So I did.
Don't forget about the Jay Gruden emergency podcast. That was the Monday morning one that got split up into two, although it was only supposed to be one.
You're right.
So you blame Jay. Blame Jay.
One other show that we do that we do not release on the podcast feeds anywhere, but that you can check out on YouTube, is a YouTube exclusive. Go to youtube.com/CBS Sports. When you get there, I would suggest subscribing, but you can also just click videos, and then you'll see a bunch of videos with a green background in them. Like that's like the header, the placeholder image. Click on those. The newest one will be our look ahead at Week 7 lines. We identified a couple of things that we liked. And a couple of totals I think you could bet on too. I would throw in the Ravens and Seahawks over for next week as well. That's at 50 right now. I'm probably going to climb up. Those two teams could get involved in a shootout. Just throwing that out there now. Would also mention that you should go check us out on Stitcher. Their app, the brand new app, totally redesigned it. Super easy to navigate and is one of the best listening experiences out there. Download the Stitcher app and then make sure and check out the Pick Six podcast. Subscribe on Stitcher and everywhere else. Let's dive right in, boys. Unfortunately for Sean, his precious little prince had another rough day. Patrick Mahomes, clearly the only MVP candidate in the entire league. He will never regress. He is unstoppable and perfect and amazing. He did regress. He actually had a pretty good game, three touchdowns, but he lost. And that's important because winning matters. Why do we play, Sean? We play to win the game. And the Chiefs didn't win on Sunday. They lost to the Houston Texans 31-24. Deshaun Watson, I thought, was outstanding. And in my opinion, leapfrogged Patrick Mahomes on the MVP rankings, along with someone else that we'll talk about shortly. 30 of 42 for 280 yards, one touchdown and two interceptions. Deceiving stat line, though, because he also ran for two touchdowns. And he threw 63 touchdowns to Will Fuller that Will Fuller dropped. So, you know, could have been a much bigger day. Second career game with two rush touchdowns. Back-to-back games, he hasn't been sacked. That is enormous. Patrick Mahomes clearly kind of gimpy, I thought. He had 116 passing yards on the Chiefs' first drive, which was insane because that's, you know, the field's only 100 yards long. And the Chiefs are now just 5-4 in their past nine games, including a Thursday night loss last season against the Chargers. So you really haven't been that great. 4-2 at the top of the division, though.
Yeah, it was an unexpected loss because the Chiefs raced out and they got 17 points in the first quarter, and it looked like they were going to cover with these, and it looked like they were going to win with these. And then what happened, I thought the key play, you mentioned the ankle. He kind of had an incident again where his ankle got stepped on and he looked really gimpy. And the problem that we've been talking about is, yes, they got Tyreek Hill back. Tyreek Hill looked great, got two touchdowns, one of which was a Randy Moss type of touchdown over a taller defender. But they're still without Eric Fisher. And when you add in how bad their offensive line looks with his decreased mobility, which is a real asset for him, not as much as Watson, but it's certainly one of his biggest assets. And suddenly the Chiefs offense looks really limited, or at least the most limited that we've seen since Mahomes became the starting quarterback. You mentioned that first drive. According to Pro Football Reference, it's actually the longest single drive they've tracked since 1999. So again, the Chiefs came out blazing. It looked like it was going to be a blowout. Mahomes hurts the ankles. The Texans pass rush only had one sack, but you could tell that they were bothering him throughout the entire game. Mahomes threw his first interception, could have been picked off another time as well. I'm actually concerned, and I know I've been.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't concerned last week.
Interesting. So now you're concerned.
Yeah, because it's
but
two
when
games.
I said I was concerned last week, everybody was like, "What are you talking about? What do you mean you're concerned? It's one game. Relax."
Yes, that's verbatim. That is what we were saying to you.
Well, that's what like Adam Azier screamed at me and was like trashed me on the FFT podcast because I said I was concerned. The Chiefs have problems.
They have problems, and again, I really think it's the ankle and the offensive line. I mean, look, they have defensive issues we don't need to get into because we've known about that for well over a year, and those issues are going to persist throughout the remainder of the year. But they got to go to Denver on a short week now, and Denver's defense is playing lights out, as I'm sure we're going to talk about later. And so I think there's a very good chance they lose their next game. The good news for them is that the rest of the division doesn't look very good. The Chargers completely laid an egg. And so I think the Chiefs are still going to win this division. But their chances for home field now with two losses are pretty much out the window. And now I don't think anyone would take them to go to New England and beat the Patriots.
So Patrick Mahomes has one interception. He should still have zero interceptions. So he threw that ball in the end zone because the flag was thrown on the play because Travis Kelce was tackled. The ref somehow decided that you can't call pass interference on a guy that's not involved in the play. But it would have been defensive holding.
Right.
So they picked up the flag. The only reason Patrick Mahomes threw that ball into the end zone was because he saw that the flag was on the field and he knew what it was. So that was weird. And I think that's indicative of a day full of some pretty terrible officiating. And
I mean, time is do the Matthew McConaughey smashing beer can gif, because time is a flat circle when it comes to these guys screwing up repeatedly in every single game. Yeah. At every single level. It's like they even go back and look at stuff. It's like, what did you look at, Al?
Right now, it is a joke. I don't like to complain about the officiating, but it doesn't make sense for Mahomes to just throw a heave-ho to Phillip Rivers a ball into the end zone because he knows there's a flag on the field and then to pick it up for no real reason at all. The only other thing I want to say, because you guys pretty much touched on everything that I was going to say anyway, is that as much as we make fun of Bill O'Brien, I give him a ton of credit. 4th and 3, 2 minutes to go, they were up 31-24. And they're on their on the Kansas City 32-yard line. They go for it. There's no kicking field goals. There's no taking a penalty and punting it. There's no doing something stupid. And they don't run some stupid play up the middle. They throw the ball to DeAndre Hopkins. Game over. That was a huge play. And, you know, we like to make fun of Bob. I give him a ton of credit for doing that. I'm not willing yet to say that Deshaun Watson has leapfrogged Patrick Mahomes' MVP race, but he is playing lights out. I don't know how they're preventing these sacks, but whatever they're doing is working.
Well, I mean, he's playing lights out because he's getting protection. Like, that is literally unheard of. We are talking about him not being sacked two games in a row. You know how rare that is? This is only the 7th time in his career where he's been sacked 0 or 1 times in a game, and 2 of them have come in the last 2 weeks. So this is literally unheard of, and I did kind of throw out the stat last week, but I'll say it again. Deshaun Watson, if he is sacked 1 or 0 times in a game, that has happened 7 times in his career, he is 7-0. He has averaged 3 touchdown passes per game in those games. And so the Texans' offense becomes unstoppable. He turns into Patrick Mahomes when he has protection. He just hasn't had protection. And I think when this trade, the Texans made the trade with the Dolphins to bring Laremy Tunsil in, we're all saying, well, there's a chance that once Tunsil gets comfortable in there, that offensive line could improve. And, you know, I think maybe we're starting to see that, but I'm still not sure because they've played – who did they play last week? The Texans?
The Texans. Who did the Texans play last week?
Yeah. I know they won. Who did they play? Oh, my God.
Former national NFL writers can't remember what happened a week ago. They played the Falcons.
So that was what I was going to say, is that – so the fact that – so we can say, hey, maybe this offensive line – is gelling, or we can say they just play 2 trash defenses in the Falcons and the Chiefs, and we don't actually know. And, you know, Darius Leonard might get 5 sacks next week when the Texans play the Colts. I do know who the Texans are playing next week. even though I didn't know they played last week. You know, and so well, there are
the important thing, John, is that you made sure to ask everybody without, like, you know, giving us a heads up that we would have to know the Texans.
He just wanted to bring all of us down with him.
Well, I didn't want to. My ship was sinking. I knew it was going down. I had to make sure we all looked completely foolish. But yeah, so I think that's what you have. And but also I want to throw out that Sean, because you had been bringing it up on prior podcasts, was what Mahomes is on pace for.
Yeah, I actually haven't calculated it.
5,610 yards. So he's still on pace to break the NFL record, even though he keeps going down each week. But, you know, if
Sean Watson, how many touchdowns are you on pace for?
Mahomes, that's not my ballpark. That's Sean's.
It's weird that you would look at the yardage and not do the touchdowns, but I'll check now. I will point out, too, that after like 3 weeks, I was like, he's not going to keep doing this. And Sean's like, Wait a minute.
First of all, I've been on the record since week one that I think he'll break the passing yards record, but will finish well short of 50 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So
week three, I said, listen, he's not going to do this every week. He's not going to stay on this pace. He is going to come back to earth. And you're like, no, not the pressure.
I still think he can break the passing yards record.
37.
I'm standing by that.
37 touchdowns. Hello, regression.
So 2 points about the Texans. Titus Howard left the game with, I think, what they're calling a pretty serious injury. That would be a bummer, obviously, now that the offensive line is finally starting to gel. The second thing is, I think a big key that the Texans have done is this year is they are lights out in the red zone. Last year, they were scoring a touchdown on roughly 50% of their red zone trips, which was, you know, among the lowest of playoff teams. This year, they're up to 71% in the red zone. So obviously, I mean, just by not kicking field goals, and they actually do have a kicking problem. Their field goal kicker could be cut after he missed an extra point and a field goal today. But just, you know, turning 3 points into 7 every single time, I think it's also been key for them.
By the way, quickly, I want to say, I take back what I said about Deshaun Watson not leapfrogging, because, as you pointed out, Brinson, Will Fuller dropped 3 touchdown passes. So he would have had 4 touchdown passes on the day. One of the interceptions he threw was like a Hail Mary at the it was a weird play. I think it was maybe one of the end of the halves, end of the first half. Either way, so yeah, Deshaun Watson has moved ahead of Patrick Mahomes for right now for me.
Well, I mean, he went into Houston, or he went into KC, played the reigning MVP, beat him straight up, and I realize they're not playing each other, and the defenses are, you know, Houston's defense is better, and their offensive, you know, what I mean, like I get that there's all sorts of, you know, it's not a quarterback head to head competition, but he went in there and balled out, and he played great down the stretch. Like the Chiefs were up early, and Deshaun led a big drive to take the lead. And then also led another huge drive to ice out the Chiefs and to keep them from getting back on the field. I just think, again, like you look at the problem with this defense is that you can run on them so easily. And if teams are running on them, it's going to mean that Mahomes is going to have to be perfect. And I don't think he can be perfect with that offensive line and his injury. And as I've pointed out, and I'm going to point it out again right now, the one team I was worried about running the ball was the Texans. Their next, 5 opponents are the Broncos, who are a very good running team right now. Their offensive line is actually starting to play well. The Packers, maybe the best running team in football. The Vikings, an excellent running team. The Titans, who love to run behind with Derrick Henry, and the Chargers. I'm not saying they're going to lose their next 5 games, but if these teams all fit the blueprint and the mold for how to beat the Chiefs, and I would be worried if I'm Kansas City that with a banged up Mahomes and that offensive line, we're going to have to be perfect on every offensive possession.
Yeah, and Brinson, that goes along the lines with if Mahomes doesn't have the ball. The Chiefs only had 20-minute time of possession in this game, which is absurdly low. And they only had 22:45 last week. And so you're looking at 2 straight games where they were under 23 minutes of time of possession. Since Andy Reid's been the Chiefs coach, which was he was hired in 2013. They've only gone under 23 minutes time possession 5 times. And 2 of them were this week and last week. And they've never won a game doing that. And all NFL teams in the past 60 times where they've gone under 23 minutes possession, they are 6 wins, 54 losses in their past 60 games. So if you don't have the ball, you can't score. And if you can't score, you can't win. And the thing that is bad, I mean, obviously it's bad for every team, but if you can't stop the run, that's especially bad because teams are just going to run down your throat, eat up the clock, and your offense is never going to be on the field. And like Brinson said, if Mahomes isn't perfect, they're not going to win. And all of a sudden with the ankle injury, he's not perfect. So, I mean, this, Sean, you said you're concerned, and I'm Almost with you, but not quite there yet. But the Chiefs defense.
Did you provide the record for when they're under 25 minutes? I don't want to double down on it because I've got it in front of me. I looked it up. It's a great stat.
Under 23 minutes.
Okay. Well, yeah. I just did 25 just to get a nice, concrete number. 2-10 when they're under 25 minutes with Andy Reid in terms of time of possession. So, Sean, grab your little Mahomes pillow. You're ready to cry yourself to sleep.
The one thing I was going to add is this defense. We talked about, trading for Jalen Ramsey or whatnot. I honestly don't even think it's a secondary. I think they need like a sideline to sideline linebacker, which unfortunately a linebacker that good just isn't going to pop up being available for the trade deadline. Frank Clark said after the game that they have to reboot. That to me is the most telling thing, because when you think about rebooting, that's what I think about like us, like people who are bad at technology, like, oh, the internet's not working. I'm just going to plug it in and plug it back, plug in, plug it out. And like, hopefully it works again. And like, that's what the Chiefs are doing. Like, they're just hoping they hit reset. It doesn't work like that. Like, this defense is screwed. There's no solution unless they are able to trade for multiple players. And that's not going
to
happen.
They moved from a 3-4 to a 4-3. And it's like, plus like people are like, Steve Spagnuolo will be fine. And he won a ring. It's like his defensive sucks since he left New York.
They got Darren Lee, the former Jets first round pick who washed out, and he missed conservatively 4,000 tackles in that game. He was fast.
Frank Clark's not been good.
No, Frank Clark hasn't been good.
And Ford for the 49ers has looked awesome.
I would still think about trading a first-round pick for Jalen Ramsey.
And Justin Houston looks good, and he looked good last week against the Chiefs, so the Chiefs just look like idiots now for giving up other good players.
You mentioned D. Ford. He balled out for the 49ers, who may or may not have served notice to the Los Angeles Rams that this is our division. Beep. I was going to say the B word or something, but that I don't know, wasn't going to work out. 20-7, buddy. This is our division, buddy. 20-7, the 49ers beat the Rams. I'm going to tell you straight up, that was the biggest ass kicking of the season. It was an absolute mauling, Ryan, in terms of what the 49ers did on the offensive line and defensive line to the Rams. Jared Goff, for the first time all season, had less than 2.6 seconds to throw, according to NFL Next Gen Stats. The 49ers jumped to 5-0. They smothered him. Jared Goff threw for 78 passing yards. 78. He's just
3.3 yards per attempt. He was like a running back.
3.25 yards per attempt. It's just the 26th game since 2009 with less than 3.25 yards per attempt or less. Oh, actually, I didn't realize this. Brady Quinn did two of them. Brady had two in 2009. Jamarcus Russell had a pair in 2009. Tim Tebow had one in 2012. Charlie Whitehurst on this list. Josh Freeman. Nick Foles had one in 2013, actually, that year when he was great. Of course, Andy Dalton's on the list. Jimmy Carter.
Cutler on the list?
No. Derek Carr made it. Duh. Jacoby Brissett is actually on there from 2017, early in the year. I know, late in the year. Jimmy Clausen had a couple. Kerry Collins had a couple. You get the point, right? Ryan Lindley's on here.
It sounds like a list of a lot of people I'd like to have a beer with.
Sounds like a great, yeah, for sure. But it's also a list of like rookies and like veterans who just weren't that great. And I think when you look at this situation, and you have to say like, was this the all right, let me ask you this, Ryan. Was this the 49ers exerting their dominance, or are we legitimately concerned that the Rams offensive line and the Rams offense under Sean McVay is not what we knew it to be?
I think it's a combination of just a heads that bet. I know before the season, John and I'm pretty sure, John, you had the Seahawks along with me winning the division. So
Sean, by the way, absolutely buried the 49ers multiple
times. Oh, I know. I was talking if the Cardinals might end up being better than the 49ers.
So I wasn't totally surprised. We've all talked about how at the end of last season, Jared Goff was not the Jared Goff Sean McVay knew and loved earlier in the season. They've had injuries along the offensive line. No Bloom got hurt in this game. Jared Goff has gotten paid, and he looks somehow worse. And I think this was, as much as this was a passing of the torch in the division, I feel like it was a passing of the torch from Sean McVay to Kyle Shanahan. Because Kyle Shanahan's been crapped on the last few years, not entirely his fault. In fact, I don't think it's his fault at all. Mostly injuries and just getting the personnel in place. And they have it in place. Robert Saleh is going to win Coach of the Year. He's my second favorite Saleh after Mo Saleh.
Coordinator of the Year. By the way, Robert Saleh he had like 75 cutaways to him on the sideline, freaking out as they stuffed him. The Rams did not convert a single third down. They were 0-9, and they're also 0-4 on fourth downs. And most of them were like run it right at the middle, dumbass play calls by Sean McVay. It was very surprising.
And I think one of the things, and we've talked about this a lot, is that Sean McVay is weirdly conservative. Mm-hmm. He was less so today, but that's something that sort of gotten lost in the mix because he was, you know, the offense is rolling up 800 yards a game. But Kyle Shanahan outcoached him today. The defense is the best defense in the league. I think they're actually better than the Patriots defense, and that's actually saying something. You talk about Jared Goff throwing for 78 yards. At the end of the third quarter, he was 7 for 10 for 27 yards. Sean could do that standing on his head.
He had no time. Every time they dropped back, he was just getting swarmed, whether it was, you know, Dee Ford, Nick Bosa, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner. I mean, they're just sending waves up there, and the secondary's playing really well in the back end. The other thing I thought too, like on the Rams defense got pushed around. Yeah. I don't know the number is like the end result was that great in terms of yards per attempt rushing. Yeah,
it was not good at all.
It's like 2.4.
Yeah, but they 41 carries for 99 yards.
But they ran the ball well. It was a, we're going to get out of here because we know they can't score on us type of game. And, you know, the Rams were selling out to stop the run, but couldn't really do a great job of it.
So I think to me,
go ahead, Todd.
That it kind of feels like if I'm the Rams, I am kind of worried that maybe defensive coordinators, other teams have kind of figured out Sean McVay's offense. So it's a combination of Jared Goff regressing. I don't even know if we ever agree that he was good. So I don't even know if it's regressing. Jared Goff playing like we thought Jared Goff was, where if he has a perfect situation, then he can play well. Where, you know, last year they had every starting offensive lineman every game, and now they don't have that. So they had the same unit last year, don't have that this year. And so I think what we've seen is that the McVay magic is just other teams are kind of like, hey, man, you haven't really changed anything. You've been doing the same thing for 2 years and we're kind of on to you. Like, this is the NFL. You've got to adjust all the time. You've got to be inventing stuff. You've got to be progressive. You've got to be coming up with stuff. And it feels like the Rams are just doing the same thing all the time. I feel like Robert Sala, half the reason he was cheering is because he was like, oh my God, are the Rams really doing that? Is this really happening? They're
these
like,
morons are running in short, fourth and short, right in the middle in the heart of my great defensive line.
Like, exactly. And that's what you were like. There's no creativity with McVay's play calling. It wasn't even that he was calling weird things. It was that, like, look, you're sending guys in motion. You're running wide receiver screens, tight end screens. You're just trying to fool everybody all the time. But this game, it was just like, he's running up the middle. What is going on? I don't even know who to pin this on with the Rams. A lot of it's Jared Goff's fault. Todd Gurley obviously didn't play in this game, but even if he did, they probably lose 20-0. I'm going to take points away from the Rams for Gurley playing. So it is just this. This offense just crashed and burned, and it's been unbelievable to watch. And not to take anything away from the 49ers because they did. The defense was an awesome performance, but the Rams have just crashed and burned in a way that I don't think we've seen in a while. To go from they were in the Super Bowl last year, and now, I mean, Brinson, we laughed at you when you said the Rams and the Chiefs might not make the playoffs, and now you might end up getting the last laugh here.
I don't remember saying that, but suck it, nerds.
Hey, by the way, so I don't think anyone would have cared if they got manhandled by the 49ers if they didn't get their doors blown off by Jameis Winston, who had a really duty performance on Sunday morning. One other thing I want to ask you about, because apparently this is my thing, John's kickers, Sean is Mahomes regression guy, but I'm going to bring up the question about the quarterback. So Warren Sharp tweeted this out. So only $10.6 million cap hit this year for Jared Goff, first year of a four-year $134 million deal. In 2020, that cap hit balloons to $36 million. So at what point are we having the conversation about Jared Goff? Let's say he continues to play.
I think we're having it right now by you bringing this up.
But I mean, before they signed Jared Goff.
It was the introduction to your conversation about Jared Goff and the question, at what point are we having the conversation about Jared Goff?
I mean, we're calling him in the office and like, we want to thank you for your service type conversation. Because
hey, at what point are we going to do a podcast about football?
Look, man, you guys yelled at me about Chase Daniel, then Chase Daniel went off. And then I went away and he had a not great
podcast. I was going to say, you missed the podcast where we killed Chase Daniel.
But look, Jared Goff's had an extended period of playing replacement level at best.
You can't get out of his contract until you could save a bunch of money. It is more likely that they would not try to get out until 2023.
So, Breach, is your guy Stan Kroenke going to ask Sean McVay, why did you convince me to sign Jared Goff to all this money if he really, truly is terrible?
I mean, if you're Stan Kroenke, how do you feel right now about the fact that your last two big extensions were Todd Gurley and Jared Goff? All you see is Les Snead just setting your money on fire. I mean, it's like the scene in Dark Knight Rises where Joker's just like taking a bath and setting the whole pile of money on fire.
Dark Knight.
It is. That's what Kroenke probably feels like Les Snead is doing right now. I mean, so you look at the – because if you're going to sign someone to extensions like this, you know, you have to know that they're going to produce. It's not often that we see someone become the highest paid player in NFL history and then kind of fall flat on their face. And Gurley has only gone downhill since he signed that contract. And Goff, a lot shorter range because he just signed it last month. But he has gone straight downhill, like down the side of a mountain since he signed the contract. And I think it is fair to ask what Ryan's asking on this football podcast is it time – how long are you giving Goff? They play the Falcons and the Bengals over the next 2 weeks. If they just go 1-1, that's concerning. They have to win both of those games.
What are you going to do, go to Bortles and sit Goff?
No, I mean, you're not going to sit Goff. But, I mean, I do think that if they end up going 8-8 or something, you have to look at yourself in the mirror in January and say, you know, how do we get out of this?
Two more points I want to make. And by the way, the Rams drive chart, they went – 7 plays, 56 yards in 3.5 minutes for a touchdown to on their very first drive. And after they forced a punt out of the 49ers, it was like, oh yeah, the Rams are here to play. And they're going to show up in a big way after with 10 days rest. And then they went punt, turnover on downs, fumble, punt, turnover on downs, punt, turnover on downs. They had, and I cannot believe that this is real, they had 5 drives that were negative net yards.
Hey, listen, you don't go 7-for-10 for 27 yards on purpose.
Their third quarter drives, one, their first one in the third quarter lasted one play for negative 7 yards and lasted 9 seconds. Their next one was 3 plays for negative 15 yards and went 1 minute and 34 seconds. And their next one was 3 plays for negative 7 yards and 1 minute and 17 seconds. They only had 3 drives that were longer than 1 minute and 45 seconds.
This defense is amazing. You remember when we laughed at the Steelers for getting 5 turnovers and losing to the 49ers? Turns out the 49ers are a really good football team.
Yeah. I have 2 more points I want to make too. We got to move on to this game. But it was a pretty big game. I thought that Daryl Henderson looked awesome. Where has he been?
He can't catch a toss pitch. Sweet, he dropped it.
Did he fumble one?
He hit him right in the hands. Otherwise, yeah, he did look pretty good.
It was like the Raiders fumble against the Bears last week.
Really? Okay, I missed that one. Okay, all right, well, whoops. How did I miss that? What was it? Maybe I was telling my family or something.
No.
And are we sure Jimmy Garoppolo is good?
No. So that's what I was going to say. It's the 49ers' weak link is their quarterback. And that's not to say he's bad, but he looks awfully like a game manager, and he's not paid like a game manager. And he also, I mean, unlike most, like, I hate using the phrase, I'm using it 3 times in 10 seconds, game managers, he kind of is mistake prone. Like, he threw a really bad interception in this game that, if they lost, is a laughable, like, interception that we're spending more than just 3 seconds on.
By the way, if you say game manager one more time, Alex Smith is going to appear at your window.
Speaking of 49ers quarterbacks, you almost feel like if this 49ers team had like Matt Ryan, like they would be the favorite in the NFC, I think, by a wide margin.
Sean, let me turn around on you, because Ryan Clark tweeted out, and I disagree with this, by the way.
This was preposterous.
Yeah, even I disagree with that. So he says the San Francisco 49ers are a really good football team, and Jimmy GQ is good, but I feel like this team would be in the exact same place that they are now if Mason Rudolph was the quarterback.
Come on.
No.
Jimmy G.
Not saying Jimmy G's bad when I say this. I'm saying he's like a 14 to 18 range type of quarterback.
Yeah, that's right.
Who would you rather have, Jimmy G or Jared Goff?
Contract included?
Contract included.
Jimmy G.
Jimmy G, because they can get out of that pretty soon, too.
Goff's like 5 years younger, so I'll take Goff. I will say this, though. Jimmy G.
Nothing. Jimmy G has never really been good in his career. He does is win, Sean. All he does is win.
True. I will.
11-2.
One more thing about Jimmy G is that, like, and this is why I think
he's handsome. Say it, Brinson.
He's handsome. Yeah. Who's better looking, Garoppolo or Goff?
Garoppolo.
It's Garoppolo.
Is it? I don't know. Goff's pretty handsome. Looks tall, lean, serviceable.
I think probably depends if you're into blondes or brunettes, you know.
What do you?
I'll go Garoppolo.
I'm a blonde. I'm a blonde guy myself. So
I'm married to a redhead, which is why I'm a Dalton fan.
Do you want to?
I've never thought of that. That was on the profile. That's the only dick.
Your wife thought she was marrying Andy Dalton. Do you want to tell us what your wife is saved in your phone as?
Andy Dalton.
You know Andy Dalton?
Do you know about this, Sean? What John's wife is saved in his phone as?
I don't know, John.
No. Come on, John.
Oh, come on. You've embarrassed me. I
thought Brenton was just going to say it. I don't care.
I can't remember exactly what it is. Tell us what it is.
My ginger baby.
That's actually pretty funny.
Because we were at the draft or something, and all of a sudden it like pops up on the phone. I was like, does that say my ginger baby? And it does.
And it wasn't Andy Dalton.
Yeah. And I was like, Andy Dalton's calling you? One more thing on Jimmy G before we move on. I'll point out that he is only 12 months removed from ACL surgery. A lot of times, I know that like Adrian Peterson changed the timeline. And we, you know, none of us here really know anything about ACL surgery because we haven't experienced it. But like, I didn't think that your explosiveness comes back about 18 months later. So maybe he'll get better as the season goes along. If this defense is this good and their offense has upside, the 49ers are terrifying. And they're 9.5-point favorites.
Are they better than the Patriots right now?
If they played head to head right now, I would take the Patriots.
Neutral field. All right.
Yeah. I mean, you're Belichick versus Kyle Shanahan. I mean, he's got to have PT.
I will say this. I think Kyle Shanahan wouldn't cower like
Sean McVay
did last year in the Super Bowl.
It's so great to meet you, Mr. Belichick.
I
text you.
Yeah. By the way, the 49ers held the ball for 38 minutes and 52 seconds. Ooh, boy.
Great, Bob.
Yeah. Tevin Coleman also looked very good. The Steelers and the Chargers played a game of football on Friday, Sunday night.
Are we really calling a game of football?
The Chargers are, I'm going to just say this, and I don't want this to be controversial. They are a pathetic pile of trash.
Yeah.
Is that the worst game Philip Rivers has ever played? Because I can't remember him playing worse than that.
Last week was pretty bad.
I mean, it was borderline unwatchable.
I enjoyed it.
I was like mad that I couldn't watch. I wanted to watch Succession, and I mean, you can't because I got to watch a stupid game for this podcast. But I was like dying to just change off and like go watch something else. I mean, it just... So what are we doing here? What are we doing? That's the Taylor Twellman voice. Devlin Hodges, old Duck Hodges, 15 to 20 for 132 yards, one touchdown and one interception. That interception, unbelievable that Randy Fichtner and Mike Tomlin would let him throw down the field in that moment. It ended up, you know, it was just like, stop, just run the ball, melt the clock. Rivers, 26 of 44 for 320 yards, two touchdowns and two picks. He did make an exasperated face towards the sky as he walked up the field on another Sunday night loss. Melvin Gordon, 8 carries, 18 yards. Austin Eckler, 5 carries for 14 yards. Are we not four targets? This guy
dude was the best running back in football for 4 weeks, and now Melvin Gordon comes back and they're relegating him to the bench. What are you guys
Melvin
doing?
Melvin Gordon comes back last week against the Broncos. This week they have gone under 35 yards both times. So two games with Melvin Gordon, Austin Ettler, the offense looks confused. And you know what's crazy about them going under 35 yards both times? You know how many times they had 35 yards or less rushing in 2017 and 2018 combined?
Zero.
Zero.
Wow, really? Oh, okay, good
answer. And now they've done it twice since Gordon's return. So it's like, if I'm the coach, if I'm Anthony Lynn, I either say, look, Melvin, if you can go re-hold out because we don't really need you and we had a good thing going while you were gone, or you say, Austin, you're going to the bench. Like, they need to figure out what they're doing. They're having an identity crisis on offense, and it is not fun to watch. I mean, that was literally the least fun I've had watching a football game because we all knew it was going to end with Rivers. I know Sean's
what
like
about any of the Bengals playoff, playoff losses. Like, what? The
Bengals haven't won a game this year. Right?
I was going to say this year. It was just dreadful. And Brinson, you mentioned Philip Rivers' two interceptions, but that wasn't even his worst throw. His worst throw was the backwards lateral that Devin Bush got a free touchdown out of. I don't know what Philip Rivers was thinking, and since it went in the book as a fumble and not an interception, so it doesn't.
Austin Eckler catches that ball, by the way. He catches that ball and he gets 10 or 15 yards. Melvin Gordon, like,
it wasn't a great throw. I mean, it was like, he was like, I got to go use the bathroom really bad to get rid of the football. And he's like, ran off the field. I don't know what that was.
First of all, it sucks for Steelers fans because if Ben Roethlisberger was healthy, this is a legitimate play. This is the best team in the AFC North. I mean, their defense is awesome.
Their defense. Well,
speaking of Ben, I got a fun fact. Fun fact: Devlin Hodges has more wins in the Pacific time zone than Ben Roethlisberger.
No, boom! Right. His career.
And it, no, they, it's entire
2-6 that cannot... on the West Coast. They're 2-6 on the West Coast under Mike Tomlin.
One
both
those
wins come against the Chargers. I think only one win came at the soccer stadium.
One was Vic, right?
One was Vic and one was Duck Hodges.
Roethlisberger's never won on the West Coast.
Is that true?
No, he won.
Oh, with Tomlin. It's with Tomlin.
I'm going to get you. I remember
it's this. Tomlin. It's with Tomlin.
2005, he won Tomlin. in San Diego. But he came out of that game, John, so you don't get the win if you come out. They were winning.
Well, technically, you do.
You do?
Yeah. Oh, whoever starts technically gets credited.
Oh, it's like a starting pitcher.
That's right. Why Baker Mayfield.
Can you sort by times on Pro Football?
Since Tomlin was hired, Roethlisberger's 0-5, and Devlin Hodges is 1-0.
That's right. And Mike Vick is 1-0. Disrespectful.
The one thing I'll say about the Chargers, I don't want to put it all on Rivers.
Get out, by the way.
I think the Chargers' offensive line is just an absolute disaster.
It's a fire. It's a tire.
Yeah. I don't know how much of this is like, oh, Philip Rivers is old and he's washed, or it's just that every single drop back he's getting hammered. And I know he was only sacked once, but like sacks are not indicative of overall pressure. He was under
a whooping.
They can't run the ball. They can't stop anything on defense because they're all injured. And they're trying to like jam Melvin Gordon into this game plan when they were just better off with Austin Ekeler and letting him run swing passes and run up the middle. I mean, the offensive and one of their tackles. I mean, who was the tackle who was getting just whipped by Tebow?
Yeah, I think so. T-I-V-O.
Sam Tevy.
Tevy, sorry.
Sam Tevy was getting
sandals.
I mean, like he could sue T.J. Watt for like emotional distress. Based on what happened on Sunday.
That was tough to watch.
He was getting abused. And if Philip Rivers doesn't have some time to throw and they're trying to do these deep drops and they're trying to get vertical with the ball on the field and this kid wasn't on offense, it's just not going to work. And this team's not good.
Are the Chargers the worst team in the AFC West?
Right now, yeah. Which is a remarkable thing to have to say. They can't block anyone. And to further defend Philip Rivers, as you were doing, Sean, and I know that Brinson will do tonight when he cries himself to sleep. Last year when these two teams played, the Steelers stupidly had a linebacker covering Keenan Allen in the middle of the field as Brinson hugs his little Philip Rivers doll. and Keenan Allen went for 400 yards against them because he refused to put like a defensive back on him. And the first interception on Sunday night, Devin Bush was covering Keenan Allen in the middle of the field, and luckily the ball was deflected because Philip Rivers didn't have time to throw. If he has time to throw, that game turns out differently because Philip Rivers, for as annoying as he is still really good. I want to ask you one thing, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
At the end of the game,
I didn't see how that happened. I did. I was thinking about if we'd had time and we didn't have to fire up this podcast right away, I was going to do a one of those fake voice dub over the video. Video and then be like, listen here, gosh darn it, you get off the field. Just do some sort of like
this is my field. It just happened.
This is my field. You do not come on
here. My soccer field.
Yeah. And, oh my God. And like, you saw it on TV. I mean, it's like obvious.
So we should say Philip Rivers manhandled like Mike Hilton, a little small defensive back, which is sort of weird because he usually doesn't put his hands on people.
It looked like he was grabbing a child by his ear and dragging him into timeout. Like,
I have 27 kids. Get off the field.
Gosh darn it. Yeah, I mean, look, the Chargers are not good. Mm-hmm. You can't spot Devlin Hodges 14 points. You just can't do it.
And that's why what Breach was saying, this game was the worst game to watch, because as soon as 14-0, the Steelers didn't have to throw the ball downfield. The one time they did, it was intercepted late in the game, and they could just run out the clock, and the Chargers weren't doing anything offensively. So this game completely sucked.
Yeah, it was cool seeing Hunter Henry come back. I'm glad he's healthy.
He looked great.
Yeah, 8 catches, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. They desperately need him. Keenan Allen was non-existent. 2 catches for 33 yards. Mike Williams had a bad drop that could have been a touchdown. He and Rivers.
It was a bad throw.
There was a miscommunication. I mean, Rivers did the thing where he's like, I mean, look, I'm not, I don't, you, we can blame whoever you want. I mean, you a-holes are going to blame Rivers. It's fine, whatever.
I want to call Anthony Lynn real quick for not kicking an onside kick.
Oh, my God.
Or for kicking the onside kick at the end of the game. That was just the stupidest decision in the history. I don't know. You would think he has someone talking to him like, hey, look, you have 3 timeouts left. So the thing is, the chances of getting an onside kick is like 0% right now. I think it's like 4%. So it is almost zero. You don't do it if you have three timeouts, because the thing is, if you don't get the onside kick, which the odds say you're not going to, you have to make a stop anyway. And so by kicking the onside kick, the Steelers were already in field goal range and they didn't even get a first down. So they could have tried to ice it with the field goal. Instead, they punt it. They could have gone for it on fourth and one. But if you kick it deep, and let's say you kick it deep and it's a touchback, all of a sudden it's fourth and one from the Steelers' own 34-yard line.
They're punting to midfield, and you've got
It changes
everything. You're not at the 1 yard line with no timeouts in a minute.
If the Chargers had started that drive at the their own 35 with a minute left and no timeouts, that's a winnable game. Starting at your own one.
By the way, so like this is like the Vegas sweat on this. I had the under at 42.5, and I think it was 41 total points, right? Because the final score was 24-17, and so there's 41 total points. The over-under is 42.5, and after they punted, all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, holy crap! I was like, 100% chance they're going to get flagged for holding in the end zone. It's going to be a safety. It's going to go over 43. And then Rivers throws the pick to Sutton, and he like gets it. And he's like, all right,
the pick six could have killed you.
I was like, go down. I was like, what are you doing? I was screaming in my office.
By the way, that onside kick, that was, as Breach said, there's a 4% chance. That was 99% almost. They almost pulled it off. It was a perfect onside kick. They almost pulled it off, and it still was stupid to do it. Under no circumstances
The punt was great, and you put it on the one, and that's awesome. And so nothing wrong with doing that. I will say, I really thought Mike Tomlin should have gone for it there.
That
basically gives you the same situation with punting from your 25 if they actually kicked it deep.
That's true.
And you know they're running. They're not going to do any more stupid stuff with Doug Hodge just throwing the ball. So I thought they might take a penalty. I thought at the very least try. They didn't do that. But
yeah, did you hear Chris he goes, you know, Al, I think this might be the last time that Duck throws the ball tonight. And Al goes, yeah, probably the last time he throws downfield. He goes, no, I think last time, period.
He's right.
He's not throwing again. They got this lead. I mean, look, Pat Daugherty of Roto World had a great tweet. He's like, how is every Chargers game in the history of like the Chargers the same game? I mean, it's like they poop their pants out of the gate, give somebody a lead, and then Rivers has to like lead a long touchdown drive, and then they're down seven, and they have to figure out a way to get the ball and try to make it happen, and then he ends up throwing a pick.
Why don't they draft offensive linemen?
I don't know. We've talked about this game too much.
I want to ask Ryan this real quick. Do you think the Steelers are a wild card team in the AFC? Because if Justin Tucker, his field goal sailed over the upright last week, I mean, it almost looked like it missed. And if the Steelers win that game, hey, we got 3-3 at the top of the AFC North. And you know, the Steelers defense looks good. Do you think they could win the division or at least make the playoffs?
Well, here's the thing. No, I don't. But even if they do, they're going to get smoked by whoever, the Chiefs.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you win that division this year, and, like, Mike Tomlin's getting coach of the year.
Well, he's one of the Redskins either way, so it doesn't matter. No, they're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, Duck or Mason, whomever. And, like I said, if they get to the playoffs, they're going to lose by 50 points.
Are we going to call him Duck from now on?
It drives me nuts that this guy's nickname is Duck. Like, you can't be a quarterback.
He won a duck calling contest. What did you call him?
Look, have you ever been duck hunting?
Yeah. Nice.
Wow.
Not bad, right?
I thought his name was Duck because when he was a kid and he threw passes, people would yell Duck.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you can't be a quarterback and be called Duck.
That should be Eli Manning's name, by the way. Duck Manning.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will talk about how the Cowboys are screwed.
Oh, boy.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features, like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating, so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads, so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. All right. I was lying. We're not going to talk about the Cowboys. We're talking about the Vikings because that was on the rundown first. But then we'll talk about the Cowboys. It'll segue by the NFC East. The
Don't give away your whole plan.
Why? I don't care. I'm going to
let it unfold naturally.
Right, it's more fun when people don't think we have a rundown and you just come up with it on a whim.
Well, that's sort of what happened. I told y'all all week long.
No, actually, I didn't talk to you on a podcast because you skipped both of the podcasts we were.
I told everybody. Oh, snap.
I got dunked on.
Told everybody to stay. I
just got dunked on. Yes, Brinson was not at a Care Bear bar crawl. He was at the NC State game.
Yeah, I went to the Luna concert on Monday. I'm an open book. I tell people. I told everybody that would listen, or anybody who wouldn't listen. I said it everywhere that the Vikings were going to whip the Eagles on Sunday and that they were going to utilize play action passes and take deep shots to Stephon Diggs, and all these clowns bench Stephon Diggs. I got loose on Instagram comments about 4 o'clock because like the Pick Six Pod Instagram account posted my picks, and like all these Eagles fans were tagging me and like, I'm gonna come back here on Sunday afternoon and blow you up when the Eagles thrash the Vikings. I was like, all right, I'll see you there. And I just like got in the comment section just blasting people. Kirk Cousins look.
This is how he's been.
Love that you're bragging about that.
Laying on the couch, yelling at his phone. His son's starving.
Do you think instead of like typing out his Instagram, he like, Siri, type this.
Siri, tell this guy, sup.
Exclamation point.
Kirk Cousins was awesome in this game. 22-29, 333 yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. Stephon Diggs caught 7 passes on 11 targets, 167 yards and 3 touchdowns. At least I think 2 of them were on play action. I think the first one maybe was not. Dalvin Cook, 16 carries, 41 yards and 1 touchdown. They're using a smart approach to Dalvin Cook's usage. Like when they get leads, they're getting him out of there and they're putting Alexander Mattison in. They don't want him to get hurt or get too worn down. The Eagles were fine. Jake Elliott threw an interception, Breach. How does that make you feel? Did you lose fantasy on a kicker interception?
You know what? I wasn't happy about that because what was Doug Peterson thinking? It was right before halftime. You don't have to get cute. Just take the points. And they were getting the ball first to start the second half. So, you know, like I love a good fake field goal as much as anyone. And nobody appreciates a kicker throwing a possible touchdown pass more than me. But here's the thing is that it was 24-10 at halftime. If they had just kicked the field goal, it would have been 24-13. The Eagles came out and scored on their opening possession of the second half. And then it's 24-20. Then they got another field goal in the third quarter. Like it kind of would have changed the dynamic of the game. So I thought that was a foolish decision by Doug Peterson. I'm not going to blame Jake Elliott for not knowing how to throw a pass because kickers don't throw passes. All you do in practice is kick footballs and like drink water and watch butterflies, you know, like, you know, and saw, your little kids, you know, Brinson, you have a little kid. They play baseball, sit out in right field, and, like play with butterflies and pick at grass.
That is actually accurate.
Yeah, that's kickers at practice. They're not throwing passes.
Do butterflies let you play with them? Don't they fly away?
I mean, they like sit on your finger and then like you try to play with them, and then they fly away. Yeah, but so I just thought that was a horrible, horrible call. And I like Doug Peterson's a good coach. But I thought I kind of thought that killed the Eagles went into halftime kind of like downtrodden. So but the Vikings dominated this game, and all I can do is side with Brinson because they were also my Super Bowl pick, and they look good. And if you asked me today if I thought they were still going to make the Super Bowl, I would say yes.
Yeah.
What happens when they actually have to play a good defense, though?
Yeah.
The Eagles' secondary is terrible.
There's not going to be any left.
Look.
Bears aren't going to the playoffs.
They have 2 losses.
I agree with you.
They have 2 losses this season. Yeah, at Chicago and at Green Bay.
Then they lost by a total of 16 points. Those are two good defenses on the road in division rivalry games. Why was Stephon Diggs acting like everything is hitting the fan? Grow up, act like you've been there, go blow up some bad secondaries. They've beaten the crap out of the teams that they want beat. And it's like, they can beat up on bad teams. They're like the little bully who can't handle it. It's like, no, that's a sign of good teams. If they're thrashing bad teams.
At a certain point, though, they have to beat a good team.
Football Outsiders has been saying it for years.
What point is that, Sean? What team in the NFC is good? The 49ers?
I would like to watch them beat the Packers and the Bears at home.
They play the Chiefs.
I don't think they can. Chiefs are different, though, because it's not so much good teams, it's good defenses. Cousins can light up the Chiefs defense just fine. I don't even dislike Kirk Cousins. I will say this, though. Brinson mentioned Kirk Cousins' great day, how bad the Eagles' secondary is. If you guys could guess, what do you think is the percentage of Cousins' throws that were thrown into tight windows? So it's a very nice percentage.
6.9%.
Yep.
I'm reading the same tweet. And don't be afraid to give credit where it's due.
Research or something?
Was it it's from Next Gen. I don't know who tweeted it, but it's from Shale Next Gen. You can look that up on Next Gen.
Athletic.
That's right. Sean likes to steal stuff. Probably got it from Reddit. No doubt. Look, the Eagles secondary stinks, but the Eagles, 75% of the media picked the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl this year. Okay. So the Eagles are a good team. They're a deep team. The Vikings annihilated them today. It was a bloodbath from
Eagles basically had the Chargers offensive line playing in the secondary. That's how terrible their secondary was. I mean, there was no one out there.
Yeah, it was bad.
The Eagles did cut it 24-20 in the third quarter. And so there was that moment where I'm sure Vikings fans were having their panic attack of, oh my God, Kirk already, you know, he played well for first half, and this is a team with a winning record. It's over. We're going to lose. I don't know what's going to happen. And because that's what happens when Kirk Cousins is your quarterback. You're going to lose all your confidence. You're going to start having an anxiety attack whenever a team starts making a comeback. And somehow they held on to it. And as much as we loved on Stephon Diggs, I do want to point out that he had multiple big drops on this game and probably could have gone over 200 yards.
He caused the interception, by the way.
Yeah, for a guy who was demanding trades,
Vikings player with 100 receiving yards and 3 receiving touchdowns in a game since Randy Moss in 2003. Also worth noting, the Eagles were 4 of 12 on third down. Came into the league, I believe, second behind just the Chiefs in terms of third down conversions at 52.9%. We've been saying, I think on this podcast for a couple of weeks, that was due to regress, and of course it did.
Can I point out one thing quickly?
You can do whatever you want.
I want to give Zach Brown props for calling out Kirk Cousins as the weakest link before the game, in the weekdays leading up to the game, and then he was asked about it after the game. I'm here to talk about the game. Any other questions besides Kirk Cousins, which is hysterical?
Answer questions about Cousins?
Well, I'm sure he's like, there's no way in God's green earth that Kirk Cousins is going to throw 4 touchdown passes and play out of his mind, and then he just lit those guys up like they were a Christmas tree and it was, you know, Christmas vacation or something. I don't want to wait for that one.
By the way, Ryan, you're old enough where you'll probably remember.
What is it?
I can't. Let's see if I can get it to load.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
Of course. Short-haired lady with glasses.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
The British lady.
Yeah. The Vikings' next few games at Lions, Redskins in primetime.
Win-win.
East at Chiefs.
Maybe.
Oh, they could beat the
Chiefs. They're not beating my Lions.
They could beat the Chiefs. At Cowboys, we'll get to them right now as part of the segue. And then the Broncos at home. This is a team that's in a good
position. Why are you guys suddenly thinking that Kirk Cousins is fine?
The Vikings are fine.
Okay. That's one way to answer it. They're fine. Don't worry about it.
They're fine. They're fine. They're fine.
You're the dog sitting in the burning down room.
the NFC East is the dog sitting in the burning down room, Ryan. Not Kirk Cousins.
They're 4-2.5 game back of the freaking Packers in the division. They're fine.
So is everything okay? Like if the Vikings get to the playoffs, is that good enough, or should they be doing more than that?
Let's see them get to the playoffs first.
Because if they get to the playoffs, and that's all you're worried about, then okay, they're fine. But if you want them to do more than that,
if they go 10-6 and make the playoffs as a division winner or a wild card, the playoffs are a crapshoot. You can't get mad at somebody for making the playoffs as a great team and then having a,
It happens a lot.
It happens all the time.
All right. Just ask.
No, I'm saying people get mad, though.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People get fired. People get fired because of that.
Like when Brinson was hugging the Philip Rivers doll last January and you tweeted out the picture of him.
Okay. Jets and Cowboys. Speaking of people who get fired for situations, Jason Garrett is feeling a little caliente in the Garrett household right now. The Cowboys go on the road as a touchdown favorite. The return of Sammy Spleen. Sam Darnold comes back. And the Jets beat the Cowboys 24-22, season high in points, yards, passing yards, and first downs for the Jets. Darnold had a 92-yard touchdown pass to Robbie Anderson. Second longest touchdown pass in Jets history, actually. And the second longest touchdown pass ever against the Cowboys. Do you know what the longest was against the Cowboys, Breach?
99.
Nope. 94 yards from Norm Snead to Rich Houston in 1972.
That sounds like a made-up name. I was Norm Snead.
Sure. Le'Veon Bell was fine, 14 rushes, 50 yards, and a rushing touchdown. I was just really impressed with the Jets defense, and I think really the bigger thing to focus on is the fact that without Tyron Smith, the Cowboys are trash.
I think you're focusing on the wrong thing.
Nope.
Without Kellen Moore, the Cowboys are trash.
All right, so do you buy the internet theory that you espoused on our YouTube show, Ryan, that Jason Garrett realized that Kellen Moore is the hot new offensive coordinator, the new apple of Jerry Jones' eye, the guy who was going to Jason Garrett him by replacing him like mid-season when he's fired because, you know, Kellen Moore's so smart and he'll be getting wooed by other teams, panicked and tried to take control back of the offense?
Well, it certainly is weird because we couldn't talk enough about Kellen Moore being a super innovative Sean McVay 2.0 and Dak Prescott earning that $40 million a year salary that, you know, he was supposed to get any day now. And then suddenly this team hops in a time machine and looks like every other Cowboys team with Jason Garrett calling plays. So predictable, so boring. Let's see if I can find the tweet real quick. Terrell Owens came out of hiding to tweet and clown Jason Garrett to Jerry Jones. And here's what he said after the game. Hey Jerry Jones, still think Jason Garrett's the answer? I'm guessing that's sarcasm. For a decade now, it's the same old song and dance. I knew they were going to Jason Witten on third down prior to the touchdown and knew they were going to go to him on the two-point conversion. Not too late to bring me back. So, I mean, look, Terrell Owens is watching, half paying attention, and all the Cowboys, like analytics, Twitter people are going crazy about how everything seems to suddenly have changed. Maybe Kellen Moore suddenly decided to call every play that Jason Garrett wanted, or maybe he's doing something. Whatever the case, I don't think it's just solely being without
beat. It wasn't, by the way, just T.O. Tony Romo was on the call for this game, and he said something to the effect of this has Jason Garrett's, you know, fingerprints all over this.
Right.
So, and look, we give Tony Romo.
Tony was burying the Cowboys.
And we give Romo a lot of credit, as we should, for, you know, correctly diagnosing things live as the game is going, all that. So I believe him if he's saying that he sees a lot of...
I believe T.O. because T.O. actually doesn't say a lot of things now, and he wasn't wrong about that.
Guys, I saw T.O. be inducted to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's right. You did it locally.
That's right.
Go
ahead, Sean. I don't have a story to tell.
I really don't.
Yeah, okay.
I was like, I was going to talk about the Jets. I find it funny that Brinson introduced this as, like, you know, like their best offensive game and all this. And, like, I don't want to downplay it because Darnold actually did look good. And Adam Gase actually looked like he actually put together a game plan that indicates he understands how to call plays and coach offensive football. But it is kind of funny that this is their best game. They scored 24 points. And it wasn't even, like, that prolific of an outing. But Darnold did look good.
Darnold looks really good.
No, I mean, it's infectious. It's contagious. Clearly, him being there has helped out a lot.
It's contagious.
I can't believe that Breach, I want to talk about the best field goal conversion of the season.
Well, I was waiting for you guys to finish. I'm just going to butt in with field goal kicker talk. And here's the thing is that, and, you know, we were chatting in Slack about this today. So Brett Maher goes out there and hits a 62-yard field goal. And this is outdoors in New York. It's not an easy place to kick. The NFL record for longest kick is 64 yards. Brett Maher has two 62-yard field goals in his career, which I think is the longest of multiple, doing that twice. And then the guy goes out and chokes on a 40-yard field goal. And all of a sudden, remember when the Buccaneers kicker Matt Gay missed that easy field goal, and Bruce Arians like, oh, I want to take that penalty because you never want to be too close. He needs to get Brett Maher as his kicker because that's literally the strategy. The closer he is, the worse he is. Like, he went up, it was 21-9, I think. It would have cut the lead to 21-12. Still a two-score game, classic Jason Garrett move, but that's another discussion. And he just whiffed on the field goal. And from 40 yards, you know, you got to hit that. He didn't. So, you know, he should have missed the 62-yarder and made the 40-yarder, so it kind of flipped. It didn't matter in the long run. But this, the thing about the Jets is that I feel like the Cowboys almost got ambushed here. I mean, if you're the Cowboys, you're like, oh, we watch Jets film. They're horrible. Sam Darnold, their quarterback, just had mono. There's no way he's going to be any good. And so, like, if I'm a quarterback watching this game in the NFL, I'm thinking, Jesus, maybe I need to go get mono if that's how people get play in their first game back. And so I think they were just surprised by how well Darnold played. I mean, I didn't expect him to play that well. 338 yards, two touchdowns. That was way beyond anything I thought he would do. He outplayed Dak Prescott. And, you know, Prescott has just been on a downward spiral. So I don't know what's going with the Cowboys.
Sean, how do you feel about that Dak Prescott MVP that you made in Vegas?
I mean, I said it was over as soon as Tyron Smith got hurt, and it is, I think it's safe to say it's officially over. We should, real quick, Breach just mentioned it. The Cowboys were down 12 in the fourth quarter, and they had a 4th-and-9 at the Jets 22, and they tried a field goal with 14 minutes left. Down 12.
To cut it to 9.
Yes.
To cut it to a two-possession game.
They messed the field goal.
A two-possession game to a two-possession game.
Right. Like, I know 4th-and-9 is not a gimme, but at that point, you've got to go for it and hope that at least...
Is you that don't have moment, to go for it.
Is that the moment when Jason Garrett was like trying to get high fives and nobody would high five him?
No, that happened. So it was 21-16. Jets had the ball. They drove down, and then the Jets kicked a 38-yard field goal, and the Cowboys had to hold him to a field goal to stay in the game. So the Jets kick a field goal with 3:24 left to go up 24-16. So it's still a one-score game. All the Cowboys defensive players are walking off the field. Garrett's literally out there trying to high-five them. And RJ Ochoa from who's he with?
Dallas Morning News, maybe.
Yeah, so he's out there. He tweeted out the clip. Garrett is out there trying to get high-fives from the guys coming off the field. And literally no one, they walk by him. And they, like, one of them accidentally bumps his hand, like, looks at his elbow like he just touched acid. I mean, it was not a good look at all for Jason Garrett to just have his players completely blowing him off, especially in that pivotal situation of a game. It was 3.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Is there what percent chance do you give it, Ryan, that let's say on Sunday night, and I point – no, just hit me. This happened with Wade Phillips too. It was a Sunday night game against the Eagles, and the Cowboys got humiliated at home. Wade Phillips was fired midseason and replaced by Jason Garrett. This coming Sunday night, the Cowboys play the Eagles at home. What happens if they're humiliated by the Eagles at home and they fall to 3-4? What percent chance do they fire Jason Garrett during their bye week?
Like 10%. I mean, he seems – why would this be the one thing that puts him over the edge? And who are you going to promote? You going to promote
Kellen Moore?
Chris Richard, who's been getting head coaching interviews.
Chris Richard makes more sense, but I mean
– you maybe promote
you Chris have two. You have two candidates to do it.
You're not promoting Kellen Moore. He's 12 years old. And
but you know what's going to happen is that Garrett's not going to lose because the only teams he can beat are NFC East teams. He's beaten the Eagles 3 straight times. He's 9-1 in his past 10 games against the division. That's literally all he knows is how to beat NFC East teams.
The Cowboys. Yeah, the Cowboys.
We just talked about how the Eagles aren't that good.
The Cowboys throttle the Giants, Redskins, and yeah, but the problem is the Eagles match up well against the Cowboys.
Why?
Because the Cowboys, if they don't have Tyron Smith, they can't block. And the Eagles have a good pass rush. They just have a bad secondary.
Well, we don't know if they're not going to have Tyron Smith.
He might get back for next week. But anyway, the Cowboys thrashed the Giants, Redskins, and Dolphins the first 3 weeks. And now they've lost to the Saints, Packers, and Jets. Are we sure Dak Prescott can he beat good teams?
Yeah. No, he can. You got to protect him. Just like we had the same conversation about Phillip Rivers.
Why is Kirk Cousins getting railroaded and everybody's like giving Dak?
Because Dak Prescott came in as a rookie and played really, really well. Kirk Cousins, once Sean McVay left, has been terrible. He's worse than Case Keenum.
It's not true.
I'm not saying I agree with this, but it's because Cousins in his career now has like a 6-28 or whatever it is after he beat the Eagles.
And Dak also has more playoff wins.
Yeah.
In far fewer seasons than Kirk Cousins.
Wow, congratulations.
But Dak has undoubtedly been in a better
supporting cast with that offensive line. So
yeah, I think
I'm just telling you that.
Wait, they have Garrett Bradbury, the offensive rookie of the year.
That's true.
I mean, look, I'll comb through your award predictions to find a bunch of terrible predictions too.
No, oh, I can't wait. Every single one is more defendable than a center winning rookie of the year.
We should have a mid-season show where we go over our just horrible predictions and make fun of each other.
Oh my god, I just looked it up. Ryan predicted a kicker would win defensive rookie of the year.
There That's not surprising.
Kickers aren't even defensive players.
No, he didn't.
Of course he didn't. Why would he do that?
Jeff Reed.
What do kickers qualify for then in the rookie of the year?
This actually came up last year with
Michael Dixon. I know, Sean. That's why I'm asking Will.
Is it offense or defense? I don't know.
Why don't you tell us?
I think punter should be defensive Wilson. And kicker should be offensive.
Yeah, I said that last year. We don't know the answer. It's never going to happen because no one cares about kickers.
That's mean. I'm right here.
I can hear you.
All right, what else? Hopefully the Yankees don't win. You know who sucks too?
You're here.
The Yankees. Let's go. Seahawks, Browns. Oof.
Ooh.
Oof. Cleveland had this game. I don't know what happened. They were winning this game. Seahawks are now 11-2 in their past 13 games.
You know who's done better than that over that span?
No.
Nobody.
Oh. Okay.
I was going to say the Patriots, but I was like, maybe.
Good spot for a fun fact, but that'll work too.
I didn't know where. I know we were trying to lessen the fun facts.
Russell Wilson. Yeah, that's fine. Russell Wilson. By the way, shout out to whatever listener found Sean's address and sent him the fun fact tank top.
And so Bill, Sean, tweet out that address. So
like 1 a.m. Sean texted 1 a.m. last night or Saturday night. Sean texted is like, I gotta check out what just came in the mail. It's a tank top that says hashtag fun fact on it.
Amazing.
I bet it was the dude who runs the fun facts. I'll DM him and ask him. I bet it was Sam who did it.
How does he have my address?
I don't know.
You probably look it up on reverse white pages or something, right?
For instance, I tweeted it out. How do you know my address? More because concerning. Brinson gave it to me to give it to you.
Sean's moving.
He lives in Oakland, in case anyone's wondering.
How come you're not wearing your Pick Six zip up that I sent you?
Yeah,
we talked about this because it is incredibly tight to the point where you guys would make fun of me. You guys made fun of me at dinner at the summit for wearing a shirt that fit me perfectly fine. I don't know how you're going to react if I put on this half zip in front of you guys.
I know how we'll react.
Yeah. You start putting on it in front of us, it's going to be weird. Russell Wilson put it on in front of the Browns. 23-33, 295 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 9 carries for 31 yards and a touchdown as well. 14 touchdowns, no interceptions this season. And if I may posit, I think Russell Wilson is the current leader after 6 weeks, and mostly 6 weeks, of the MVP race.
Guess who said it also? Pete Prisco. Pete Prisco means it has to be true.
I know. As I quote
you, would only
I
don't say, think
you don't even get a lot of argument on that, I don't think.
I mean, if what you want is a team that's winning games and you need a guy that's carrying the offense and playing at an extremely high level, it's
Their
hard to find.
Defense is not good either.
The defense stinks. Yeah. The run game is pretty good. Chris Carson's playing really well. He's got Tyler Lockett, who's a sneaky number one receiver, but it's not Julio Jones or anything. And then after that, he's got no one else. Will Disley suffered an Achilles injury in this game. I think the belief is that he's probably going to miss the rest of the season.
Offensive line injuries.
Yeah. I mean, Russell's playing out of his mind right now.
The best part is that in the third quarter, apparently the helmet went out, the communication with Brian Schottenheimer. So he's just calling his own plays.
He's calling his own plays and let a touchdown.
And it looked a lot better than the Brian Schottenheimer.
Of course offense. It did.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I figure out what happened to the communication. It's just out. And Pete Carroll's like over there with like a pair of scissors. Like
by the way, we talked about the Seahawks being 11-2, and that's the best record over the last 13 games for any team. Mayfield is throwing more interceptions than anyone on planet Earth right now, too. He had 3 on Sunday. They all weren't his fault. The first one was, I think. The second one may have been tipped. The third one was sort of a backbreaker towards the end of the game. But I don't know what happened to him from this year to last year.
He can't blame
the offensive line.
He's leading the NFL in interceptions.
Yeah,
I'll say this about – he's had a number of picks in the last 2 weeks that have bounced off his receiver's hands. That shouldn't result in an interception. But if you look at all those passes, his ball placement is so wild. And it happens on passes that aren't going for interceptions. But – we're talking again. just because he's missing a guy's chest doesn't mean he deserves to have an interception out of it. But he's creating easy completions and turning them into difficult catches because he can't hit a guy in stride. Like, it's a major problem.
Yeah, yeah. And it was tough because he had a spot there where they were down four. And it's like, all right, you got the ball back. You're against the Seahawks defense. It isn't that good. Go lead a touchdown drive, win this game, and, you know, you're going to get praise from here to, you know, kingdom come. And I think he threw an interception there, right?
So you know what happened? He actually threw it to Dontrell Hilliard, hit Hilliard in the hands, bounced up, and
it wasn't on him.
Wright made the play.
Did you guys see the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter sequence that Freddie Kitchens completely botched?
Oh, my God.
I'm glad you brought this up because I want to bring up Kitchens, but go.
Okay. So they had a third and goal from the one, threw incomplete. Then on fourth and goal from the one, I want to make sure I have this right. They had a play.
Threw a pass to Jarvis.
Just take over.
They threw a pass to Jarvis, and Jarvis catches the ball, sticks his arm out over the end zone. It looks like he crosses the end zone, the goal line, but it was ruled a fumble because the ball came out immediately thereafter. And then the Browns jumped on it in the end zone. It was called a touchdown. And then I think the officials got together.
They ruled it. Yeah, they ruled it short.
Right. Then they ruled it short.
And so,
because there was an official that ran down the inline doing that, but they ruled it short.
So then the thing is Freddie Kitchens is yelling at the officials, and the Browns actually come out and they run a play, and Chubb is going to score. But then before he does that, Kitchens challenges the play, which negates the touchdown that they were going to score in the next play.
And, I think the ruling was that you can't fumble forward in the fourth quarter. Right. And so it wasn't that it wasn't recovered in the end zone. It's that it's placed back where the fumble took place. So the ball, even though the Browns recovered in the end zone, the ball's moved back to the 1 yard line where the fumble was. And then that sets up you guys where Freddie Kitchens, somebody's talking to him and, hey, you got this great play called for once because you whiffed about the whole entire fourth quarter. He was batting about 5% with his play calls. Calls a good play and just boom. Challenges
You know the best part? After the play gets overturned, and actually Jarvis looks like he did score there, but the official's missing. That's not a huge deal. After the play gets overturned, they have fourth. They go for it again. They run the exact same play. Chubb gets stuffed. So if they had just left the whole thing alone, they would have scored there. But it was a series of stupid events that has doomed Freddie Kitchens to be Freddie Outhouse. Suck it.
We're at Hugh Jackson level. I'm literally thinking, watching this, I'm like, would Hugh Jackson have won this game for the Browns? Because he might. You couldn't, like, you would think Hugh Jackson was rock bottom, and the fact that thought even popped in my head that he would probably be a better coach for this offensive set of talent is almost mind-blowing how bad Kitchens has been.
Hugh Jackson was throwing a shoe at the television.
The problem, he's just got too much going on. Like, he's clearly overwhelmed as a first-time head coach, and it's costing them games.
Let me ask you this.
He threw the challenge flag as they were running the play, and
that he was going to walk in and score, and then they lose the challenge, and then they run the same play, and he gets stuffed.
Apparently, Seattle was paying attention on the first play.
By the way, fun fact via Hawk Blogger on Twitter: it's the first time in the Pete Carroll era the Seahawks have given up 28 points or more on the road and won, which I think just highlights how this team has completely shifted identities. Because when Russell Wilson was the quarterback when he was younger, you know, they won a Super Bowl, went to another Super Bowl, but it was really the defense carrying it and Wilson doing stuff in the fourth quarter, whatnot. But for the most part, you know, they were not an offensive team. They have completely switched now, where this is his team. The defense is riding on his coattails. And I can't remember who pointed this out on Twitter, but it kind of feels like Pete Carroll coaches this team as if he still has that defense and he still has that quarterback. And he doesn't fully realize that things are totally reversed now. You have arguably, you know, the best quarterback in football right now. You know, lean on him and don't lean on your run game and your defense. That said, they can run the hell out of the ball.
Reach mentioned Hugh Jackson. Here's a super depressing fact. The Browns' record now is worse than it was last year this time. They're 2-4 right now. They were 2-3-1 last year this time.
Oh, my God. Is that right? How is it possible? That's incredible.
So
their schedule gets a lot easier down the stretch. I guarantee you they're going to make some, like, 6-1 run to just miss the playoffs.
Don't they play the Patriots next, though?
Yeah. I don't know.
Out of the bye. At Patriots, at Broncos, out of the bye. And then
the Broncos are your Super Bowl team. They're not beating
Bills. They might lose to the Bills.
What are you looking at?
They have the Bills, Steelers, Dolphins. They have the Steelers twice and the Bengals.
The Bills are one of the best teams in the AFC.
Ryan, we missed you. We needed someone else to call out Brinson on his crap.
Here's
they run plays.
Listen,
they have a bye. I mean, that's easy.
Listen,
that's true. Here's no loss next week.
Here's their schedule from week 11 on.
Okay.
Steelers, Dolphins, Steelers, Bengals, Cardinals, Ravens, Bengals. Faux clowns.
Yeah, but if they lose the next three games, they're going to be two and what?
What are I just said they're going to go on a meaningless late season like run of good wins.
If they get 2-7,
this is exactly what Baker did last year. They were crap. They were out of it. They were ruined. Then he like blew up the Bengals. He's going to throw for like 500 yards and like he's going to have a monster season because he blasts the Dolphins
and then
Bengals and Cardinals. And they're going to pick 7-9. Right.
But this is going to happen after they fire Kitchens and they hire Todd Monken as interim. And then they're going to keep Todd because he went on this huge run like Kitchens went. And the cycle repeats over and over again.
5 years from now, they'll be hiring Hugh Jackson again.
They're going 8-8 tops.
I don't think they can fire Freddie. They have to just take away his play calling. Moving along. Cardinals. Falcons.
Speaking of a coach that's going to get fired.
Yeah, Dan Quinn's getting fired just by week. He has the 49ers and Rams the next 2 weeks at home and then his bye. If they lose those games in embarrassing fashion, I think he will probably be fired. We'll see. Julio Jones, 8 catches, 108 yards. He moved up ahead of Terrell Owens and Andre Johnson and Steve Smith in terms of 100-yard games. Kyler Murray, I thought was really good.
He was incredible.
Okay. Just making sure. Yeah. He was awesome.
And this wasn't like dump offs, check downs or whatnot. Like he was throwing the ball downfield with precision, 27-37, 340 yards, 9.2 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. David Johnson looked incredible as a receiver. Chase Edmonds and Dave, like we were talking
Chase
about.
Edmonds is good.
Wait, we were talking about like with the Panthers, like they can't really give McCaffrey breathers because there's no one there that is capable of handling part of his workload. The Cardinals do have someone, and that is a really fun dynamic running back duo. What allows them to do is just spread out Johnson more and use him kind of as, you know, their best receiver outside of Larry Fitzgerald. And I'm really excited to watch the Cardinals every single week because I think Kyler's making a lot of strides. And I tweeted this. I think by the end of the year, there's a chance we're going to look at the Cardinals and say they have the second best quarterback situation in the NFC West.
Wow.
If you factor in money, too, because you're going to look at Goff like, oh, my God, they're stuck in that contract. You can kind of say the same with Garoppolo, not to the same extent. And I think Murray, by the end of this year, could be better than both of them.
So they're 2-3-1 now. They should probably be 2-4, but, you know, whatever. I mean, if you're Mike Bidwell, I think you're looking at it like I think Steve Keim's going to save his job just by virtue of how Kyler Murray is playing. And how Cliff Kingsbury's offense is starting. Like, I don't know if I love what Kingsbury's doing in every situation. I don't know that he can coach up a defense, and I don't know if they'll ever be good on defense. But Kyler Murray looks like the real deal, and he's playing well, and they need to get him some weapons and some more protection, and the Falcons are absolute trash. But Kyler Murray is playing really well.
You know what's funny is that the Cardinals almost blew this game. They were up.
Matt Bryant missed an extra point.
Matt Bryant did miss an extra point. Thanks for stealing what I was going to say, Brinson. But that's pretty much improbable. Matt Bryant hadn't missed an extra point all year. He's been one of the most accurate kickers in the NFL for the past 3 years. And, you know, it's funny because the Falcons tried to get rid of him last February and they couldn't find anybody to replace him because they had no idea what to look for in a kicker. And all of a sudden they brought him back and then boom, he just shanked an extra point because the Falcons came all the way back. We're about to tie it at 34, and that was brutal. And the thing is, like, you look at the Falcons, and here's why Dan Quinn has to be fired. And maybe they can wait till the end of the season, but it has to happen. Is he literally – they got rid of some coaching staff members last season. Dan Quinn said, hey, I'm going to call the defensive plays because I'm a defensive guy. And what has happened this season? Nothing. You just gave up 34 points to a rookie quarterback. Like – the Cardinals were laughing at you. They just ran circles around you. And that's embarrassing if you're a veteran play caller. Dan Quinn is now the scapegoat for the defense, for the head coach. Just boom. Just bye, Dan. Sorry.
To follow up on your point, Jeff Schultz of The Athletic tweeted this out. If you throw out the 22-second drive just before halftime last week in Houston where the Falcons played, these are the last 13 possessions versus the Falcons defense coordinated up by Dan Quinn. Touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. That was last week in Houston. This week it's Arizona. Field goal, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, touchdown. No punts, no turnovers, no any sort of mistakes on the other side. Uh-oh, Brinson's happy about something.
You watched this Astros game? Carlos Correa did a bomb for a walk-off in the bottom of the 11th.
Brinson, we're podcasting.
You hate to see it, Yankees fans.
Everyone listening, Brinson knows this already. I feel bad for Matt Ryan. He was lights out in this game, 30 of 36, 356 yards, 9.9 yards per attempt, four touchdowns, 144.9 passer rating. And he is just stuck on this franchise that isn't good this year, but I don't see a path in terms of like them being good in the next year or two, because this defense is straight doo-doo. They're going to have to hire a new coach. I almost wish it won't happen. I wish the 49ers could trade for Matt Ryan, reunite him with Kyle Shanahan, because that would just be, they would be the favorite in the NFC if they traded for Matt Ryan, because he's playing lights out.
What if you could trade Matt Ryan to the 49ers for the 49ers defense? Would the Falcons be any good? Like, would that be enough?
Well, who would be the Falcons quarterback? Do they get Garoppolo?
Matt Schaub? No, whoever the... I'm just trying to think. Like, their defense is so terrible. And some of it's injuries, but a lot of it's just been, like, not great personnel decisions. Could the 49ers... I mean, the 49ers defense and Matt Ryan would be spectacular. But, I mean, Matt Ryan's the rare example where you have a franchise quarterback. But literally everything else around him, at least on defense, I mean, the offense is pretty good. Just does not work on any level. Brinson's smirking about this Yankees game.
I'm watching the Correa doesn't even like run to first. He just stands there.
He knew his bomb.
I know. It's great.
He just lobs his bat.
You guys are so disrespectful to the Falcons. You can't even.
Oh, my God. He does like he wants the crowd noise. He's doing that.
There's nothing that makes me happier than a Yankees loss.
Yeah, screw the Yankees, man. Like,
God, I hate the Yankees more than any team in the history of sports. Moving along. I don't need to keep talking about this stupid game. The Falcons stink. Dan Quinn's going to get fired. It's a matter of whether he gets fired in his bye week or at the end of the season, right? We can agree on that.
Yeah, I agree.
They're worse than the Buccaneers, who, by the way, went to London and played the Carolina Panthers. I said it was one of my locks, and a good thing I did, because the Carolina Panthers blitzkrieged them. Kyle Allen, the first quarterback in NFL history to win his first five career starts without throwing a single interception. And he's the first undrafted quarterback to win his first five starts since Kurt Warner in 1999. Chris Godwin was awesome. Jameis, Sean?
Hey, allow me to talk about Jameis, because if you were to say that the Bucs would hold Christian McCaffrey, C-Mac, to 57 yards on 26 touches, you at the very least think this game is interesting or close. It was not interesting or close because Jameis Winston had five interceptions and he had two fumbles, one of which was lost. He already has 10 interceptions now after six games, which is the most in his career through the first eight games of a season. He has not played eight games this season. I think Bruce Arians made some comments at the end of the game about how Jameis always tries to be Superman. This is the same crap that Bruce Arians was saying when he got the job and how they got to coach the stupid out of him and make sure he understands that he has to stay within the framework of the offense and not try to be Superman. Exactly. We were saying this at the time. You can't coach Jameis out of Jameis. This is just who Jameis Winston is. And Bruce Arians thinking that he could fix Jameis Winston by, you know, getting him not to throw the stupid mistakes and all that is downright. It just was never going to happen. There was a sequence in this game where Winston had one of the most like hilarious fumbles where he like tried to pump fake, but he pump faked it into a defensive player, you know, rushing him. And then he recovers the fumble. And then the next play he fumbles again. This is just what you get with Jameis. You're going to get the high variance plays. And I think it's very clear that, you know, they'll ride him out this year because they have nothing better behind him. But he is going to be playing for another team, cough, cough, the Las Vegas Raiders in 2020.
You know, what's funny is watching Jameis and watching Jared Goff and Cam Newton's benched. It was that thinking that.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Cam Newton's on the bench. He's injured.
No, he wasn't on the bench. He didn't travel to London.
Well, I was going to say my point is that Kyler Murray was arguably the best number one overall pick who played this weekend, which is kind of crazy to think about because that's not something you would have thought would have happened before the season at any point.
Why are you making faces? What's wrong?
He's the only three number one picks playing quarterback this weekend?
I just said he was the best. I mean, Matthew Stafford will play.
Miles Garrett should be playing. Oh,
I didn't see Sam Bradford.
Kyler
Murray was better than Baker.
For sure.
Kyler Murray is one of the best quarterbacks, period, in this week. Just 1 week.
But here's the thing, is that we talk about Jameis every week, and I feel like this was the final nail in the coffin game. I think Bruce Arians, he's going to have 9 hours on this flight home from London to watch this film, and if he doesn't, it's probably not good that he's on a plane, because he's going to, pull his hair out, just vent to someone about how bad his quarterback is, and you can't do that because the quarterback's on the plane with you. And he's just going to be thinking, my God, what did I get myself into? And I think he's going to come to the realization that, hey, I can't win with Jameis. And, obviously I'm not going to trade him or cut him right now, but I think this is it. I do think the Buccaneers have decided. I think this game will be that breaking point of we're going to move on and that's it. He's not our quarterback next year. And before I move on, I got to bring up my favorite highlight from the game. We saw a fair catch kick.
Too much kicking talk. Go ahead.
A fair catch kick, Sean. Hasn't happened.
Did it go in?
5 years. I think that most people didn't know that was even a rule, where if you fair catch a punt on the very next play, you can attempt a free kick from anywhere on the field. And Brinson, I think, is recording me. Why are you laughing?
No.
Because I'm so giddy about the fair catch kick.
Yeah, no, he's texting you.
Keep talking. Don't just keep talking.
Yeah, so if the team punts you and you fair catch it, you can literally try a field goal any point in the game on the very next play, and you almost never see this happen, because the only time it ever makes sense would be at the end of a game or the end of the half, and the Panthers, the situation fell in their laps. Joey Sly had a 60-yard field goal, and the thing about the fair catch kick is that the other team cannot rush you, so it's just like a kickoff, except you have a holder instead of a tee, and he somehow missed it. But it was the most exciting play of the day, guys.
Happy for you.
Panthers are the best team in the NFC South.
The Saints are probably better, but I mean, I don't think it's one thing about Cam Newton that Bill Barnwell tweeted it, so give him credit, but something I should have thought about tweeting. Kyle Allen is better than an unhealthy Cam Newton.
Yes.
A healthy Cam Newton is better than Kyle Allen.
Yes.
I thought about tweeting that too, so give me credit as well.
Does that need to be?
Yeah,
I don't want to dunk on Barnwell. Yeah, feel like we've been saying this. Because of how well Kyle Allen's playing, they don't need to rush Cam Newton back. But if Cam Newton is 100% healthy, they should
play.
Give him the starting job again.
They showed a graphic during that game that said Kyle Allen, last five games, 5-0 with Kyle Allen. Then it was previous 9 games, Cam Newton 1-8 or 0-9 or something. It's like,
I saw that.
It's what are you doing, NFL Network? Cam had shoulder surgery last year. At the end, his shoulder was falling off.
He couldn't throw more than 30 yards downfield. He said he literally could not throw it that far.
Yeah, and then this year his foot's been broken. So what are we doing here? I mean, and of course I got friends who are anti-Cam that are texting me with a picture of that. I'm like, I don't want to get that crap out of here. I don't think Cam's coming back. I don't know if it matters, but we'll see. Panthers are good. Their defense is awesome.
Yep.
I mean, and again,
moving on. We have too many games to deal with. We're doing this forever. Broncos, Saints at Jaguars. This is a low-scoring game. The Saints, maybe the best team in the NFC South, beat the Jaguars 13-6. Decent game. This is a defensive battle, right? I mean, good game for Teddy Bridgewater, I guess. Wasn't a blow-up game or anything like that, Ryan. But they keep winning with Drew Brees gone, and we know he will come back. Do you think this a win like this on the road? They keep covering. They keep winning in October. Do you think a win like this on the road allows them to not rush Drew Brees back?
I think you keep Drew Brees on the bench, just like Cam Newton. I'm joking.
Whoa. Okay.
I'll relax. No, of course not.
Teddy
Bridgewater. He was fine. He wasn't great. He was throwing. He missed a lot of throws high in the first half. He had a fantastic throw to Jared Cook for the lone touchdown in that game. In the second half, and that was about it. There was a lot of defense being played, but there wasn't a lot of great quarterback play. Drew will come back when he's healthy. I don't think he'll come back before then. He can't grip the football. It's not like Cam Newton can sort of hobble around and try to fool you and convince you that he's not actually injured. If Drew Brees can't pick the football up or he can't throw it 15 yards, it's not going to work out. I want to point out one thing. Cam Jordan, he might be one of the most underrated edge rushers. Maybe not, but I feel like he sort of is. He doesn't get mentioned as often as the other guys. He absolutely dominated Juwan Taylor, their second-round pick, the guy that we were talking a lot about in the draft process about being really good, how he's going to solidify the right side of the Jaguars' line. And he sacked Minshew twice because Juwan Taylor, who was built like a house, had no answers for Cam Jordan. And that sort of stuck out to me. Minshew was fine. he's a good quarterback, but again, I don't know if he's the guy you build a team around. Nick Foles is healthy, which is sort of a weird thing to say because I'm not a big Nick Foles guy.
You want Nick Foles to get the job back when he's ready to play?
And Teddy Bridgewater to keep the job.
Right.
That's what he said.
Both those things.
And your team, Chase Daniel?
Yeah.
Ryan, I feel like I want you to run an NFL team. Why don't you be hired as a general manager and see if your cockamamie schemes work? Because I think they might.
I think Wilson just watched too much Friday Night Lights and saw Matt Saracen, so now he just loves any back.
I never watched Friday Night Lights.
You've never? Oh, that's weird. My biggest takeaway from this game is that the Saints defense is one of the five best defenses in football, and that's why I think they're going to win the NFC South because they have not lost with Drew Brees out, and I don't think any of us expected that to happen.
That's a good takeaway.
All right. By the way, the Saints and Bears play this week.
Ooh.
Under.
Points.
Hammer that under, guys. It's 39 and a half. They're not getting to 40.
It's like a 17-14 game.
That's a
lot. How are they getting to 40 points?
They're not.
Turnovers are the only way that really screw that. But like Bridgewater hasn't really been like making turnover worthy plays because they're not letting him. The concern honestly would be if Trubisky plays and he has one of his like five interception, you know, nightmares.
Yeah.
Team Chase Daniel, like I told you.
Another game that did not get to 40 points because the Titans didn't score any points. Mm-hmm. Broncos 16, Titans 0. I want to point out to anyone who will listen, that includes the millions of people who download this podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever you get it, that the Broncos should be and could, and I understand that they're not, the Broncos should be 4-2 and tied with the Chiefs for the division lead, hosting Kansas City, a banged up Patty Prince Mahomes coming to town, 4-2 with a division title on the line, and I would be peacocking around all week long. And if they won, I would literally turn into a peacock, like popping around, bragging about how the Broncos are going to win that division. I don't think the Broncos are dead yet when it comes to the playoffs.
They're behind the second place Raiders, who are half a game back of the Chiefs. The Raiders went overseas. We talked about this on the YouTube show. John Gruden hates traveling. Whenever season beat the Bears and beat them pretty badly. That said, we can get to the Broncos in a second.
The Bears.
I have no idea. We've been dogging Jameis Winston. Marcus Mariota has some things he needs to talk to himself
about. He got benched for Ryan.
They're both not being back with the team that drafted them. This is Ryan for both of them.
Ryan Tannehill and Marcus Mariota are like the real life version of the Spider-Man meme.
Mariota threw one of the worst interceptions. Even Jameis was like, that is a terrible interception. What are you doing? He like beat the pass rush, and he just threw like a Phillip Rivers arm punt down the field, and it was intercepted by Simmons, I believe. And at that moment, the funny thing is, do you know how many interceptions Marcus Mariota has thrown previous to that this year?
Zero.
None, which seems impossible. But that was enough for Mike Vrabel and his stupid mustache to be like, all right, you're out. Get your arm loose, Ryan Tannehill, and Ryan Tannehill went and threw a bunch of interceptions.
By the way, that 2015 draft class, quarterback draft class, that was, you know, very well anticipated.
Who's the third quarterback drafted?
Garrett Grayson, who Sean Payton, after they drafted him, said, quote, this was the one.
Yeah.
After that was Sean Mannion by the St. Louis Rams, mm-hmm. Bryce Petty by the Jets, Brett Hundley by the Packers, and then Trevor Siemian by the Broncos, which actually might be the best value in terms of like where they were actually picked.
That is a rough.
That's the quarterback class.
Takeaway is, and someone made this point, that there doesn't have to be a franchise quarterback every year.
I really believe that Marcus Mariota can go somewhere that will use his skill set with RPOs. Yeah, Chicago. Yeah.
That's where he's going to sign.
Why? What have they done in Tennessee that hasn't?
He's had like seven offensive coordinators, and the guy who is the offensive coordinator right now,
he's the FedEx guy. He's the delivery man.
We can literally FedEx a better playbook to the Titans than they're using right now. I mean,
Arthur Smith is basically like if I was like an NFL coach. I mean, like that's like, come on, what are we doing?
If like Brinson somehow managed to like get himself into the Panthers building and like somehow took over.
I just don't like. I like Marcus Mariota a lot. He seems like a genuinely nice person. But since 2015, he has done literally nothing to convince me that he can.
No, it's over. It's over. It's done.
In his defense, he couldn't feel his fingers last year. I honestly think he's gone. He's gone. I'm with you. I would.
Tannehill didn't play as long as Mariota did, but he looked better. I mean, they both looked like trash.
Couldn't look worse.
But this is like, you know, trash where you find like food on the ground. It's only been there for 5 seconds. You can still eat it, or like
you eat food that you find on the ground.
That's called the 5 second rule, and that's food.
Yeah, 5 second
rule. Called trash.
It's still trash.
Refuse, if you will.
All right. Well,
Breach, important question. Do you incorporate the 5 second rule involving the trash can?
If I drop in the trash, there's no 5 second rule.
Have you ever pulled anything out of the trash can and then eaten it?
In my entire life?
Yes.
That's a yes.
I mean, if you even have to think about it. Yes.
Yeah. I think like
college I'm not proud of.
If it's like in a bag or something,
that's sealed. Fine. If it's sealed, it's fine. If
even it's like a McDonald's bag or whatever, throw it up by accident.
Whoa, that wasn't a sealed bag. That was a loosely like thrown around McDonald's bag that Ryan did. What are you grabbing out of a McDonald's bag that you're eating out of the trash, Ryan?
Okay, but here's my point. It's
a piece of burger left there.
So Ryan, you would eat Marcus Mariota if someone threw him into your trash can.
And that's a close way to put the question, to be honest, Sean. That's kind of like you're on Tinder too much to be asking me that. But Ryan Tannehill is like a peanut you find on the ground that's been there for 5 seconds. You can still have it. Marcus Mariota is the French fry that's been in the couch for 6 months. It's just done. You throw it away. It's over. They need to start Tannehill next week, at least see what they have, because he looked like the more competent quarterback in this game. He is the French fry. Mariota's the French fry. Tannehill's the peanut. Put Tannehill in. Play the peanut. Beat the Broncos or the Chargers, because that's who they play next week.
The only reason Breach is coming up with these analogies is because someone on Twitter called him the flaming sea poet of this podcast, and now he feels like he has to come up with all these incredibly weird metaphors. I mean, I actually like the French fry one. Well done. You redeemed yourself.
They were comparing us to the Around the NFL podcast. It's like a bizarre world. You know, like that.
Seinfeld. I love that guy compared to Wes. I'm sure he hates that. We're both bald.
Yeah, I don't know that all the comparisons necessarily fit perfectly, but it is like the same sort of dynamic. Like it would be like a Anchorman style.
Oh God!
So oh, the news team fight in the alley.
Yeah. We ran into him. Yeah. Of course, those guys are over there, like doing like Jumbotron, videos on in London at like Tottenham Stadium, and we're
at the county fair next week.
Pick it up, CBS. All right, let's get through these last two games. Only one game left.
Oh, really?
Redskins, Dolphins.
We didn't talk about.
It's a Bengals joke. Just kidding. We have two games left.
Well, that joke's getting old.
I wanted to talk about the Bengals, though.
Redskins, Dolphins. The Dolphins almost won a damn football game, but then they realized what was happening. They were going to ruin their chance to tank it all for Tua. So they busted out their best, worst 2-point conversion play. They benched Josh Rosen for Ryan Fitzpatrick. It allowed them to get back in the game. I assume that means that Ryan Fitzpatrick will continue to play, I guess.
No.
Flores said he's going back to Josh Rosen.
He did? Really?
Yeah. So he announced that Josh Rosen will be his quarterback for the season a few days ago. Benched him in the third quarter. Great day for backups named Ryan. He came off the bench, led a touchdown drive. And after the game, Flores said, yeah, we're going to go back. There's no rhyme or reason to what's going on. It's a lot of
nonsense. Well, I would say this. I would say that I think that their logic in starting Ryan Fitzpatrick at the start of the season, they believe that he gives them a better chance to win games right now.
That's a bad thing.
If you're tanking, that's like the opposite of what you want.
But like they want to evaluate Josh Rosen as much as possible.
Well, why take him out?
I don't think you can defend the way in which that the Dolphins have handled the quarterback.
Did Josh Rosen play terribly? Sure.
Because also, why, if you were going to tank, why even trade a pick for Josh Rosen? Because no quarterback is going to – you can't evaluate a quarterback in that situation. So I was all on board with them trading for Josh Rosen because it was a good, cheap acquisition in terms of salary, in terms of the draft pick. Because we talked about if Josh Rosen was in last year's draft, he would have been a top 10 pick. But then you trade everyone away. You just wasted a second-round pick because Josh Rosen's not going to be their franchise quarterback.
You don't know that.
The Dolphins scored in the first.
They're drafting a quarterback.
They scored in the second half for the – fun fact. The Dolphins scored in the second half for the first time this season. That is rough, man. Fitzpatrick was 12 of 18 for 132 yards, a touchdown, no picks. Rosen was 15 of 25 for 85 yards and two interceptions. I mean, I think it's just like a – I don't know if Ryan Fitzpatrick starts this game, if he's just lighting up the Redskins the whole time or anything. I wanted the Dolphins to win, though. It was kind of disappointing.
You know what's funny is that Bill Callahan shows up at his first press conference last Monday and says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to run the ball on every play. I'm going to run. I mean, he sounded like a 1940s, 1920s Newt Rockne victory speech. Run. And everybody's like, dude, the Redskins already run enough. Why are you going to keep running? And he was like, no, run. And then you know what he did? He ran the ball and it worked. And he just kept running the ball. And he's like, I don't trust my quarterbacks. I don't even care who the starter is, if it's Case Keenum or Colt McCoy or Dwayne Haskins. It doesn't matter because I'm just going to be running the ball this whole entire game. They called 33 runs to 25 passes. Adrian Peterson went off for 118 yards. And the Redskins just controlled the game because they kept run. And so, I mean, my hat's off to Bill Callahan for literally giving his strategy away on Monday, sticking to it, unlike Brian Flores, who said he was going to start Rosen on Monday and then benched him three quarters in, as Ryan mentioned. So hats off to Callahan for winning his first game, something Jay Gruden couldn't do, and not hats off to Snyder, because I do think Jay Gruden would have won this game by two touchdowns.
I will point out that Bill Callahan's strategy beat one of the worst teams in the history of football by 1 point. And it came down to a terrible 2-point conversion. Yeah. And how does this strategy work going forward? Because they're not going to win another football game just running the ball.
The Redskins are not going to win.
Unless they play the Chiefs.
Yeah. The Redskins, I mean, this game was terrible, and I didn't watch a whole ton, but I was sort of monitoring it. It seemed like the Redskins were going to run away with it. And you could tell that Bruce Allen's going to have some press conference this week where he's like, yeah, you know, sometimes you just realize you got to make a change at the, like he's going to be bragging about the fact that they won one football game against the worst team in the last decade. They're going to get obliterated by the 49ers. It's a terrible matchup for them. Then they're at the Vikings, at the Bills. The Redskins are going to be.
They might not score a point in that span.
Yeah, they really might not. Those are like the three best defenses in football, or outside the Patriots. And finally.
Oh, wait, one thing quickly.
Yeah.
You'll love this.
Quick about this podcast. I think we're like 100.
Is it a Scary Terry fact?
Not Scary Terry. You can do that in a second. But in the unofficial tote board, Sammy Watkins, 23 catches, 365 yards, three touchdowns. Your guy, Devontae Parker, 13 catches, 229 yards, two touchdowns. So it's getting close.
It's getting closer.
This is the saddest race ever now.
I feel like I'm feeling pretty good about about Parker.
Who's throwing the ball?
If Sammy doesn't play again, then you have a shot to get there.
You have a shot.
Might take all 16 games. Listen,
this podcast is way too long. Devo is not here, and there's nobody to wrangle me. Mike Wormwell doing an excellent job filling in, but unfortunately, Devo's like, stop talking, move to the next game. Ravens, Bengals, this is our last game. Ravens 23, Bengals 17. John Breach. You reach a new level of sadness this evening. How's it going?
Well, you know what they say in the gambling world? Good teams win, great teams cover. And at this point, all I am sure.
I actually have a shirt that says that.
Is for the Bengals to cover the spread, because that means the game was watchable, was exciting. I don't feel like I wasted 3 hours of my life. And that's what I got today. Look, did the Bengals only have 6 yards at the end of the first quarter? Yes. Did I think they were going to lose 51-0 and I was going to have to apologize to Sean and put the Bengals in the same tier as the Dolphins? Yes. I thought all of this was going to happen. And then all of a sudden they blew up in the second half. And, they didn't really shut down Lamar Jackson, but they really slowed him down because he did most of his damage in the first quarter. Surprisingly, the Ravens just kind of fell off the map after the first quarter. I think he had 80 yards rushing on their first two drives and then got 75 more over the final three quarters. And so this was actually a very interesting game that actually makes me more concerned about the Ravens than anything with the Bengals. Cause we saw what they got smoked by the Browns. They probably should have lost to the Steelers. And this game was a lot closer than it should have been. It went from that first quarter, it really felt like the Bengals were going to lose by 7 touchdowns. And by the fourth quarter, it was like, oh my God, maybe they could win this game. So, yes, Lamar Jackson absolutely went off, and he said after the game, hey, look, the Bengals run defense sucks, so we're just going to run over it. And that's exactly what they did, and the Bengals run defense does suck. So good on the Ravens for exploiting that, but to exploit it like they did, they rushed for 269 yards and only win by 6 points. It just makes me a mildly concerned about the Ravens.
Yeah, I love Lamar Jackson. He's like one of my favorite players, even though he plays for the Ravens, and I have no reason to like them. I will say this, Mark Andrews is – fantastic, great tight end. He insists on trying to leapfrog people and like doing the hurdle, I will give the Bengals credit, John. I don't know who the defensive player was, but he actually did another stupid leapfrog, and they punched the ball out and recovered the fumble. So I think that's going to be the new thing going forward when these guys try to jump over guys, just try to punch it out. And quit leapfrogging. You get hurt.
So I've got good news for Breach and bad news for Breach. The good news for Breach is that 10-6 is still in play. The Bengals are only 0-6. So that is the ceiling is still
what a jerk.
The ceiling is still there. The bad news for Breach is that Andy Dalton is now over 1,000 yards off the pace to tie Peyton Manning's single season passing.
Hey John, record. At what point do you want to see Ryan Finley?
Never.
Really?
Never.
Ryan Finley should start.
They're 0-6.
Sean, Andy Dalton still gets to play the Dolphins and
they might lose that game.
Jets and they don't really have it. You know what, man?
I give up.
It's a long shot, but he can still break it. Let's not joke about this. He lit up the Seahawks. The Seahawks are 5-1.
The Seahawks defense sucks, though.
Yeah, Baker Mayfield threw 3 interceptions. Dalton didn't. What? Suck on that.
Weird flex, but
are you prepared to admit that Zach Taylor's terrible?
No, the Bengals have a horrible roster, and they have been competitive in 4 out of their 6 games. So I don't think that
they could be. They could be 1-5 in the Bengals' defense.
They could be 4-2.
What?
Brenton's sitting here talking about how the Broncos should be 4-2 and winning their division. The Bengals,
that makes sense, though.
They could have beaten the Seahawks. They could have beaten the Bills. They could have beaten the Cardinals, and they could have theoretically won this game. That's 4-2.
They have a Andy Dalton had 21 passing yards at halftime against the Cardinals.
That's 4 losses.
They had 6 yards of offense in the first quarter today.
4 losses by 6 points or less. 4 losses by 6 points or less.
That's I said, 10-6 still in play. They just need to break. If the ball starts bouncing their way, 10-win team.
The good news is, well, actually, this is sort of bad news. With the Jets' victory over the Cowboys and the Bengals' loss, now the Bengals have the 3rd lowest point differential in the NFL, and they are creeping quite close to the Washington Redskins, who have a win, of course, and therefore I think would leapfrog the Bengals. So now it's just the Bengals and the Dolphins, right?
Where do they play?
They play, I think, in Miami.
Oh.
In week 16,
I'm excited to watch.
Excited to watch
that game. I'm going to request a cover. If both teams are winless, I'm going to be
to that game.
We should go down to CBS and everyone go to Miami for that game. And we all like do a live podcast at that game, like during the game, just watch Breach meltdown as the Bengals go to 0-15.
No, as they win because they blow their shot at the number one pick. That would be more of a meltdown at that point.
All right. Anything else to add before we get out of here? Nope. All right. That was fine. Cool. Let's get out of here. Great podcast, guys, as usual. Great week 6. We're back tomorrow firing up with Jason LaCanfora to break down the latest news and notes around the NFL. And then we will talk to Jared Dubin for a Monday night preview. Thanks, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.